It's a movement, but it's about people. Be the People is about we the people joining forces to reclaim and reshape the best of our nation's time-treasured traditions. Each week, we offer insightful interviews with movers and shakers from all different spheres of life. And now, please welcome Dr. Carol Swain.
Well, welcome to the Be the People show. Today, we're going to be talking about socialism. Did you know that a majority of young people in the Democratic Party reject capitalism and they embrace socialism? And among the presidential candidates that are running on the Democratic Party label, a number of them embrace key socialist tenets. We find young Americans blaming capitalism for all of their woes. Capitalism, according to them, can be blamed for the housing shortage in America, for the healthcare crisis, and for falling wages. These young people look at European countries that are more socialist or other countries around the world as part of a utopia in some cases. They believe that more socialism in America would solve many of our problems. Joining me today is Justin Haskins. He is the editorial director and a research fellow at the Heartland Institute. He's also the head of Heartland's Stopping Socialism Project, and he's the author of Socialism is Evil, The Moral Case Against Marx's Radical Dream. Justin, welcome to the Be the People show.
Hi, it's great to be with you.
Well, I have to confess that the last few years as a university professor, and I took early retirement in 2017, I would say the last 10 years was when I really focused on Karl Marx and socialism and communism, because I realized that there was an agenda and how it was affecting everything that I saw in the university.
Yeah, there's no question. I totally agree with that. I think that Marxism is present virtually everywhere in our society now, to some degrees. Obviously, not everybody walking around is a Marxist. Not everybody who considers themselves to be a progressive or a liberal holds Marxist views. But they are heavily influenced by Marx, even if they don't know it. And you definitely see this in higher education, especially. I experienced it when I was in college. And I think that most young people today are getting a significant dose of Marxism when they go to higher education, but also in K-12 education too, to a lesser degree. But certainly in higher education, it's very prevalent. Karl Marx is, despite 100 years of his ideas failing, more than 100 years, is coming back into vogue.
Well, my take on this, and I don't know your age, but I'm sure that you're significantly younger than I am. When I was in graduate school back in the 1980s, there were professors. We knew who the Marxist professors were. They said they were Marxist professors. And so you knew who they were. But what I see today is that Marxism is at every level, in every institution, even like student affairs, the chaplain's office. And people don't refer to Marxism because it's pretty much the norm.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the idea that Marx's foundational ideas, that capitalism is bad, that private property ownership should be collectively managed, that property should be collectively owned, that capitalism is sort of at its core an unfair, unjust system. I think these ideas are prevalent throughout the system. And I don't think that there is, I think you're right that in many cases you're not seeing people say, well, I'm a Marxist. That's true, but they are Marxists. And as you pointed out, it's everywhere on college campuses, from student affairs offices all the way down, offices of diversity, all these different things are just infected with Marxist ideas and principles. And so people are getting it, younger people especially. I mean, I'm 31 years old, you wondered how old I am, I'm 31. If you're my age, you grew up with it in the K-12 education system, and you grew up with it in college, and it's normal. It's actually very normal to hear people talk about things like wealth redistribution and just seizing people's assets, seizing people's property so that you can redistribute it, and how unfair it is that some people, you know, pay 30 or 40% of their taxes, they should pay of their income into taxes, they should pay significantly more. These ideas are just common today. And I think that the only way to combat it is to reform those systems, those institutions, or really to build entirely new systems and institutions so that our children can move away from that.
Justin, I agree with you 100%. And I am very much involved in the church world, and I live in Nashville, and I see the concepts of social justice is, you know, the buzzword in the church, where they have moved away from the gospel of Jesus Christ, and really they are pushing, you know, this social solution to America's problems, and they try to guilt out everyone because they really want the focus of the church to be on trying to solve problems around us like homelessness. And those problems are important. Every church I know is involved in it, but this focus on social justice actually takes the church away from its mission.
Yeah, I agree with that. So the Heartland Institute doesn't deal with issues related specifically to this, but I am very interested in this, especially on the issue of how mainline churches, for those people who don't really know what that term means, the sort of old Protestant churches that have been around forever, for hundreds of years, the Episcopal Church, for instance, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, the Presbyterian Church USA, these churches have been totally and completely overrun by Marxists. And you're right, when you go to churches, I've been to services in Chicago and other parts of the country, Episcopal church services and that sort of thing. The emphasis is on social justice. It is not on religion. It is not on faith. It is not on God. It is on, in a sense, earning your way to heaven by being a good liberal, I think is sort of the new religion of the mainline churches in America. They are not just preaching these things on Sundays, not just building programs that are built around social justice, but they're also openly advocating for these things, lobbying for various policies like gun control policies and other things in Washington, D.C., abortion rights, all of that stuff. That you actually have Christian churches advocating for abortion rights in Washington, D.C. It's a really strange world that we're living in, but it just goes to show what we mentioned earlier, that Marxist thinking is everywhere. It's not just in higher education. It's in Hollywood. It's in the music industry. It's on throughout the news media, obviously, and it's even in churches across the country. Some of the most influential churches in America are now basically being run by Marxists.
I can tell you that they also seeping into conservative denominations such as the Southern Baptists. And you think about Southern Baptists that you can't get much more conservative than that.
Right.
But, you know, it sounds good when you say social justice. Who could be against social justice? But most people, I would say the majority of them, don't have a clue as to the deeper meaning of that concept.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one of the main things really at the foundation of this, because you've actually seen people like Pete Buttigieg, who's running for president now in the Democratic Party, appeal to some of these concepts of social justice. He doesn't necessarily use those terms, but that's what he's talking about when he says that, well, if you really are a good, godly person, then you would support this new government program that I'm advocating for. That's really a social justice argument. At its core, though, what's really interesting about it is that the foundation of Judeo-Christianity is obviously people help. One of the core foundations of Judeo-Christianity is that you should be helping people, that you should serve others, that you should not just think of yourself. There's no question that that's part of it, but it's all voluntary. It's not forcing your neighbor to be the kind of person you think they should be. It's you start with yourself, reform yourself, make yourself a good person, make yourself someone who's willing to give to other people, to help other people who are in need. And at the core foundation of Marxism is not individuals voluntarily making good decisions for the world. At the core of Marxism is forcing people, coercing people to make decisions that the majority of people in society, in the case of democratic socialism, for instance, think is the right thing for the world. Whether it actually is or not is sort of irrelevant. If the majority of people in society think one particular action is good or bad, then that's what everybody in society has to go along with. That's what they mean by social justice. Force, coercion, manipulation. These concepts are not found anywhere in Judeo-Christianity. They're not found anywhere in the history of the church in America. You know, if you go back 300 years ago or something, 300-400 years ago, this is a relatively new concept, and it's something that is now pervasive throughout society. They treat it as though socialism is a form of charity. When in reality, socialism is not charity, because people are not voluntarily making decisions for themselves. They're being forced and coerced into making those decisions. And so it's a distortion of social justice. It's a distortion of charity. And at the end of the day, it's a truly awful, terrifying thing that has had horrible results throughout the history of the world when we've tried to do this. But I completely agree with you. And I think that we need to sort of change the language around this so that people understand that socialism, whether it's a social justice program that you're talking about with churches or a socialist program that's being imposed at the government level, like single payer healthcare, these things are not charitable actions. They are force, coercion, and manipulation.
You are certainly right. And we're going to take a break. And when we return, we're going to go back to talking about socialism. But this time, we're going to break it down for people that may not really understand what the problem is. So we'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to Be the People. Dr. Carol Swain is the mind behind Be the People news, radio, podcast, and YouTube. Be the People's mission is dedicated to empowering individuals to think independently, understand their responsibility, and believe in their unique ability to make a difference in the world. Check out Carol's work at BeThePeopleNews.com. To invite Carol to be your next keynote speaker, go to BeThePeopleNews.com. That's BeThePeopleNews.com.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I'm back with my guest, Justin Haskins. He's with the Heartland Institute, and he's an expert on socialism. And Justin, could you sort of break it down for the listeners that may not be totally sure of what we're talking about? Why we're so passionate about the direction that America seems to be moving in, at least on the Democratic Party side, towards just socialism. What's so bad about socialism? You say in your book, socialism is evil.
Right. Yeah. So socialism, I think, is deeply immoral for a variety of reasons. At its core, what socialism is it's collective property ownership and management. That's what socialism means. So instead of you having individual rights, instead of you having the ability to own property, instead of you having being part of a capitalist free market system where all capitalism is really is I have property and I have property rights, and you have property and property rights, and we can exchange property when we feel like it, or use money as a medium for exchanging property. That's all it is. Capitalism is basically a free society. That's all it is. What makes socialism so damaging and detrimental is that decisions are not made by individuals anymore. They're made by the majority in society. The majority makes the decision. It's all about excluding the individual and the rights of the individual and focusing instead on what's good for the collective, or what's perceived to be good for the collective. So what ends up happening in a society like that is minorities, whether they're racial minorities or religious minorities or moral minorities or whatever, end up being abused in a system like that. Because the majority of people in society to decide, well, we think that nuns should pay for abortion and contraception. And because nuns are not a majority of people in society, because Roman Catholics aren't a majority of people in society, you might have a system like that. And in fact, many single-payer healthcare systems around the world force everybody, regardless of your religious beliefs, to pay for abortion, to pay for contraception and other things that many people find objectionable. So you can see it in this very clear example. And in fact, the Obama administration did exactly this. They tried to force nuns to pay for people's contraception and birth control pills and things like that under Obamacare. So socialism is all about coercing and forcing people to do things that they may find morally objectionable. And that's not necessarily the goal of socialism. The goal of socialism is to have a society at the end of the day where there are no class distinctions at all, which means there's no differences in wealth. Everybody has the exact same amount of wealth. That's really what they're shooting for. But what they end up doing in the process is taking away people's individual rights, their religious rights, their economic rights, their property rights. And when you do that, you ruin economic incentives in society. People don't have any reason to work hard in a society like that, where everything is collectively owned and managed. Economies collapse, which is what you've seen in Venezuela and in other countries that have tried this, the Soviet Union. Productivity goes way down. And when that happens, governments oftentimes resort to imprisoning people, violence, taking away people's rights, eliminating free speech, and doing things like that in order to maintain their power, because when the economy is going really poorly, like you're seeing in Venezuela, the regime that's in power ends up being at risk. So on the one hand, even when socialism is working effectively and people are not rioting in the streets because they're standing in bread lines every single day, which, by the way, almost always happens with socialism. Even when that's not happening, you're still violating people's deeply held moral and religious beliefs by forcing everyone in society to engage in behavior that they may find objectionable.
Now, Justin, for Christians, that's very serious. And many of us believe that God judges nations. And in our American system, we have a system where the people elect the leaders, and they enact programs and policies on our behalf. And so we are responsible for the kinds of policy outputs we see. And so it's more serious than ever if we're participating in the American system and we're electing candidates and they're pursuing things that are ungodly, and we ourselves, we are being forced to participate in that. And the things that you're talking about, I mean, we could connect it to the desire of socialists to take away the guns of the average people and just what they're doing to erode law enforcement across the country. To me, that's very serious, and people are not connecting the dots.
Yeah, I think what we need to have, I think what we need to do as a people who support individual liberty is to shift the conversation a bit toward respecting everybody's individual rights, regardless of what they believe. So regardless of your religious beliefs, whether you're a Christian or a Muslim or you're an atheist or agnostic or whatever it is, I think almost everybody can agree, for the most part, that people want to have the freedom to worship God or not worship God in the way that they see fit, that they want to have the freedom to make decisions for themselves, to decide what kind of job they're going to have, where their kids send their kids to school, that they want to have the freedom to be able to protect themselves and protect their families. These are very basic concepts that exist in a free society, and yet they're impossible to have in a socialist society. And I think that any time you deny people basic fundamental rights, basic core fundamental rights like free speech and free religious expression and things like that, free association, political freedoms, whenever you're denying those people those rights, you are doing a great injustice to those people. That is, you are doing great harm to those people. And I think that at its core, I mean, that's what socialism is all about. It can't function unless it's taking away rights.
You're right. We're going to take another break, and when we return, I'd like to hear more of your ideas about what we can do to educate people and basically what we can do to educate people about the issue and just how serious it is at this point in America's history.
Each week, the Be the People show presents interviews with insightful guests from the world of politics, religion, media, and culture. The Be the People show is on podcast. It offers bonus footage. To listen to Be the People online, go to the BeThePeopleNews.com website and subscribe to the Be the People podcast, heard also on the America Out Loud Network.
I'm back with my guest, Justin Haskins, and we're talking about socialism and how it is taking over our nation in some ways, and it's a serious problem. Justin has some ideas about things we can do that would help educate the public.
Yeah, that's right. So I think that there are many different things that we can do to convince people of some of the arguments that I've been making here and some of the things that you've said as well. I think it starts with parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles. It starts with family members and friends. Talk to your family, talk especially children, especially younger people, about core issues related to respecting people's individual beliefs and rights and property rights and things like that. Talk to them about why it's immoral and it's wrong to take away those rights from people, and how everybody is born with those rights, that they're endowed by their creator or by nature with those rights, and that if we take them away, no matter whether the intention is good or not, we're doing a great injustice to them. I think at its core, that's what we have to do, especially with younger people, start talking to them about that. From a public policy perspective, one of the most important things that we can do in this country today, period, is support universal education school choice programs, things like universal education savings accounts, which allow parents to put their children in any school that they want, whether it's public or private or homeschooling, so that parents can take their kids out of the schools. Parents who don't necessarily have money to pay for a private school can take their kids out of the schools that are failing them for whatever reason, whether those schools are dangerous or whether they're just academically not up to par, or if they're teaching children things that they don't agree with, things about socialism or religion or various other things, and move them into schools that are much more in line with what parents believe and what they want their kids to understand. That's the most important public policy thing that we can push for, because our school systems is the root cause of all of these problems, both at the K through 12 level and of course at the college level, but especially at the K through 12 level. We're teaching our kids fundamentally, we're teaching kids across the country ideas that are not in line with what conservative, pro-liberty, free market people believe. And yet pro-liberty, free market parents are sending their kids to these schools every single day where they're being indoctrinated with ideas that they vehemently disagree with. We have to stop that. Parents have to take a stand and call for education savings accounts and other ideas that will allow them to move their kids out of failing schools and into schools that fit with their beliefs. I think that's really, really important.
I mean, that's an excellent point, and I hope the listeners are taking note. And I want to ask you, too, about your Stopping Socialism project at the Heartland Institute. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So about a year ago, we launched sort of informally our Stopping Socialism project. We launched it, we rolled it out formally earlier this year in 2019. The idea was that we wanted to reach younger people especially, but to the general public, parents, grandparents, teachers, and especially young people, college age people, with some of the core ideas that we've talked about here. And we wanted to do it in a way that was very clear and very accessible. And so we created a website called stoppingsocialism.com, where people can go and they can read articles written for the general public about socialism. There's some videos posted there that help explain what socialism is. It deals with very basic, simple concepts. It goes into advanced concepts as well, but you can get things as simple as, what is socialism? What is communism? Why socialism is immoral? Very basic sort of arguments. Why socialism has never worked anywhere in the world. And you can share these articles with other people and really start conversations about socialism. Start having a national conversation about socialism from a pro-liberty free market perspective. In addition to that, we've gone around the country and spoken many different places. I've been involved in that. We've been to all the major conferences this year, Western Conservative Summit. We were at CPAC, Students for Liberty holds conference. We have a great conference that we go to called LibertyCon that took place earlier this year in January. We're going again next year in 2020, reaching out to young people, college age students, talking to them about these ideas, telling them why it's so important to fight back against socialism. And of course, we do a lot of media, radio shows like this.
Wait, excuse me.
Sure.
But it sounds like the places where you're going, you're preaching to the choir. Have you been able to get your information before any groups that would not be mostly conservative already?
Right. So that the whole purpose of the book and also of the website is to reach people all over the place. And we've actually had some pretty good success with that. But we're also trying to go to college campuses across the country, right into the heart of the problem. And we're working right now on building out a campaign to do that over the next year, where we're actually going to be going to college campuses and meeting with young people who don't necessarily agree with us and talking about many of these core issues. And so we're doing all sorts of different things. But our main goal is to reach people who are not getting the message. That is definitely that we're not trying to preach to the choir. We do that, obviously. But we're not trying to preach to the choir. The main thing we're trying to do is reach people who haven't heard many of these ideas before in the past. And you'd be surprised how many people we've talked to where we start talking about these ideas and you can see the wheels turning in their head and they're saying to themselves, yeah, you know, I don't know how I can support some of these ideas. I mean, most young people we talk to actually don't know what socialism is, really. They have this very distorted vision of it.
Well, I know that the Young America's Foundation that was supported by Ronald Reagan, and it actually owns the Reagan Ranch now, that the young people that attend those conferences and meetings, they are on college campuses all across America. And one thing college students can do who are conservative is that they can invite speakers, or they can set up debates. And it sounds to me that the topic of socialism should lend itself to many debates on campuses with people from the liberal left who believe in democratic socialism. The debate format would really get the ideas and the problems before a much larger group of people.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And we're hoping to set up some of those debates on college campuses. Where it's something we're looking into. It's something that we're hoping to do over the next year. But at this point in time, we haven't been able to do too much of that. But we have been able to do presentations and things like that. And so that's our main focus at this point in time. But I totally agree with you. I think having debates, I think having socialists in the audience, getting people to come to it who don't necessarily agree with us, and a debate is a great way to do that, obviously, I think is really key. We need to reach younger people who are not hearing this message any other way. We can't just keep preaching to the choir, because pretty soon the choir is going to get smaller and smaller and smaller, and it's not going to matter anymore. The country is going to be completely overrun by socialists. So we absolutely have to reach younger people now so that we can avoid those problems decades into the future.
Now we're coming to the end of our interview, at least this portion of our interview. We will have a longer discussion on the podcast, and I will give you, the listeners, information about how you can hear the remainder of my interview with Justin Haskins. But Justin, I'd like to give you time to tell our listeners about how they can get your book and about the Heartland Institute.
Sure. So you can get my book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, any of those places. You can go onto the website and order it there. It's very affordable, just a couple of dollars for the digital version. Of course, you can go to stoppingsocialism.com. A lot of the material that's in the book is there for free. And if you want to learn more about the Heartland Institute, you can go to heartland.org, or you can search the Heartland Institute on YouTube or Facebook or all of those platforms, social media platforms, Twitter. We're available through all of those things. You can see the fine work that we're doing advancing free markets and pro-liberty solutions to America's problems, heartland.org.
And we will be posting on the podcast the links to those organizations and also the link to Justin's book. Justin, thanks so much for sharing your ideas and your passion with us this morning. It excites me to have a young man like you that has really taken hold of this issue that's out there trying to educate other young people.
Thank you so much. It's been great speaking with you.
And so, folks, you have this information about socialism and how it is infecting every area of our society. And as I mentioned earlier, our system of government was set up in such a way through our Constitution that it's we the people. We are responsible for what we see. We elect the politicians. They enact programs and policies on our behalf. The changes you see taking place, we're responsible for that. So it's up to us to be the people who stand up and change our nation and also our world. And I urge you to get involved. And also, if you want to hear more of my interview with Justin Haskins, there's bonus footage on my website, bethepeoplenews.com. The interview will be posted there in podcast form. So, Justin, I'm curious about what turned you on to this issue and what was your major in college, and I'd like to hear more about Justin the person.
Sure. So my interest in socialism actually started in sort of a very weird kind of way. I was watching what was going on with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in 2018. I write all the time for many major media outlets about a variety of public policy things. But at the time, I wasn't writing a whole lot about socialism. This is early to mid 2018. So I did write one article about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And the Socialist Party of Great Britain, if you could believe it or not, reached out to me on social media and said, you know, Justin, you don't know anything about socialism. Clearly, I can tell, because the stuff you're saying about socialism and communism and all of that is not in line with what Karl Marx actually believed. And I bet you haven't actually read much Karl Marx lately. And I thought to myself, you know what? You're right. I really haven't spent a whole lot of time reading Karl Marx lately. It's been a long time since it's been really going back to college was the last time that I read it. So I brushed off Communist Manifesto off my bookshelf, brushed it off, all the dust that was all over it, and I started reading it. And I could not put it down. I mean, I was just completely fascinated and interested by it and horrified by some of the things that were in Communist Manifesto. And that's what led me to believe, you know what? What I'm reading in Communist Manifesto, I'm seeing this everywhere. Every time some of these leading politicians in the Democratic Party open their mouths, I hear Karl Marx's voice in what they're saying. And I just don't think people know this. And I don't think they know what socialism is really all about, especially younger people, especially people my age. And so that was what really sparked my interest in this. And the more I started reading of of the not just Karl Marx, but the literature from other socialists, from socialist groups and parties from across the country, Socialist Party USA, Democratic Socialists of America, Communist Party, etc., the crazier it seemed to me that anybody would believe in this. And I became very concerned and wanting to reach younger people, especially people my age, with the truth about these things. That's really what motivated me in the first place. As far as my background in it, my educational background was in pre-law. I was planning on going to law school. I never finished law school. I did go to law school actually for a year, and I hated it because I realized it's full of people who wanted to be lawyers. And I thought, wow, you know, that's probably not the right fit for me.
What you're doing right now is more important than being a lawyer.
I hope so. I went back to graduate school. I got two master's degrees. One's in government and one is in journalism. And so my background is really more on the journalistic side, opinion writing, news, that sort of thing. And that's what I do for the Heartland Institute mostly, is I'm involved with their research publications, but also their news and opinion publications as well.
Now, tell me, at what point did you read Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals?
So I first became aware of it and started reading parts of it many years ago. I think Glenn Beck was probably the very first person that I heard talk about Rules for Radicals. So it's been a while since I've actually read through it. But I think it was several years ago. I think it was Glenn Beck that sort of turned me on to that idea.
Well, to me, the Marxists we see today that are pushing socialism, they would not be as effective had it not been for Saul Alinsky and what's this guy, Marcuse?
Herbert
Marcuse.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because those people just really laid it out in a way that made it practical for people to take the baby steps that would lead to the revolution that we see today.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that in the 1960s and 70s, but especially in the 1960s, there was a period of time where a lot of these ideas were being floated around, where they were really trying to figure out the best strategy going forward. How do we can move people towards Marxism and socialism in the United States, which is a very unique situation compared to other parts of the world. It's a challenge to make America a socialist country compared to European countries or Asian countries, just because we have such a history, a long, deeply rooted history in Judeo-Christian ideas about individual liberty and inalienable rights and all the things that you read in the Declaration of Independence. So to convince people to go the way of socialism and Marxism is very difficult to do. And so that was what the 1960s was, a breeding ground for those ideas. And many of the ideas that they came up with, many of the strategies that they came up with, have actually been in many respects extremely successful, especially the takeover of all of these important institutions, educational institutions. You see people like Bill Ayers, who's you know, writing curriculum for children, was a self-avowed, he was a terrorist. I mean, he admitted to being a terrorist. He's writing curriculum for children. I mean, the far left moved into the public school system in the 60s and 70s, and they took it over in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, and they've never looked back. And it was all a deliberate strategy. It didn't happen on accident. And Rules for Radicals, how you communicate with people, how do you bring out that message about socialism, how do you move the ball forward, was a big, big part of that, no question.
Yeah, the deception, because we know that Saul Alinsky, he really pushed deception, infiltration, as well as manipulation. And we see that played out all the time. And so his disciples have been very effective, and mostly because on the conservative side, there are far fewer people that have a clue as to what's happening and why.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think deception is a very big part of what they do. And you actually see this all the time, even now, where people like Bernie Sanders, I've heard him talk about socialism. They'll ask him a question about socialism and they'll say, well, you know, how is your socialism different than Venezuela or something like that? And he'll reply and say, well, all I want is, increased minimum wage and single payer health care. You know, I just want what they have in Nordic countries like Sweden and Denmark and Norway. way. And that's a lie. I mean, that's just a total lie. Those countries are not socialist countries. They have they do have some socialist programs, government programs there, but they are not socialist economies. If you look at the Heritage Foundation, Cato Institute, other groups that rank economic freedom, those countries are right in line with the United States. They have lots of individual liberty in those countries. So they're a far cry from socialism. But you see Bernie Sanders say that they're a perfect example of what socialism is, a perfect example of what he wants. But then he'll say things, or he or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez will say things like they think capitalism is completely irredeemable. Well, that's not in line with what those countries believe. That's not in line with what those countries are doing. So it's all about misleading people. It's all about convincing people of a lie in order to accomplish the ultimate goal of advancing socialism in America. The ends justify the means, right? That's the Marxist mantra. And you see that throughout US politics today, whether it's about this or climate change or single payer healthcare or any number of other things. Whatever it is they say their motivation is almost always not their motivation. They're misleading.
It's always the
people.
Opposite.
Right.
Totally the opposite.
Yeah, I completely agree. I completely agree. And you can see it because in their own personal lives, they're often extremely hypocritical. So they'll say, for instance, that they're concerned about climate change. We have to do something about climate change. We have to get rid of all of our CO2 emissions. Everyone has to live a green lifestyle. They'll say that over and over and over again. But then you'll see Barack Obama buy a gigantic mansion, multi-million-dollar mansion on Martha's Vineyard, which is an island that researchers that his administration actually paid said would probably be underwater because of climate change. Well, why is he buying a house on an island that he thinks could be underwater and pay millions and millions of dollars to it? Maybe it's because he doesn't actually believe that climate change is going to be as bad as he said it was when he was president. Al Gore bought a multi-million-dollar mansion in a famous beach town in California called Montecito. He paid millions and millions of dollars for an ocean view home. Why would he do that if he thinks that rising sea levels are going to wipe out that town? Leonardo DiCaprio, same thing. He owns an island in Belize. He's building a big resort on this island in Belize. Why would he do that if he thinks the island's going to be swallowed up by the ocean? And same thing with guns, of course. You see this with guns all the time. They want to take away people's gun rights, but not when it applies to the security guards who are protecting them. Well, then they should get to have the guns because they're so important and we're not. I mean, they don't really believe many of the arguments that they're making. They don't actually believe it. It's all a means to an end. And that end is centralizing power and authority in the federal government.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. I'd like for you to use the next few minutes to talk about your book, Socialism is Evil, The Moral Case Against Marx's Radical Dream. Just give a fast overview of this book and why listeners need to read it. I intend to read it.
Sure. Yeah. The Socialism is Evil is a very simple, relatively short book. It's only about 100 pages long. The idea is that just about anybody can read it, that you can hand it to a young person, even a young person who doesn't necessarily like to read, and that they can read the book. It's written in a very respectful way. I give lots of attention to the socialist movements in the country. I quote from them heavily. I try not to take them out of context whenever possible. I quote from Karl Marx heavily so that people can see their side. The argument that I make in Socialism is Evil, the core argument is that even if socialism could work effectively in alleviating poverty and crime and all of these other things that socialists are constantly talking about, climate change, etc. And I don't believe for a second that socialism can do that. But even if it could do that, my argument is socialism is still incredibly, incredibly immoral to the point where I believe that it is evil. And there are two primary reasons for that. The first is because socialism requires taking wealth away from other people who have lawfully earned it. So it's basically a form of theft in many respects. I mean, obviously not all forms of taxation, you can necessarily say that they're theft. I'm not saying all taxation is theft or anything like that, but the core foundation of socialism is let's take away wealth from people who have it purely because they have it. That's the main reason why you want to take it away from them. So to me, that's deeply immoral. And the second major issue is many of the things that we've been talking about throughout this conversation related to people's individual rights as it pertains to religious liberty and moral liberty and that sort of thing. If you're requiring people who believe that abortion is wrong to pay for abortion, that is immoral. Whether you think abortion is right or wrong or is irrelevant, if you're forcing people to do that, it's immoral. If you're forcing people to violate other beliefs that are unrelated to that, like maybe physician-assisted suicide, for instance, or maybe you have somebody who's a vegetarian who doesn't believe in killing animals, but you're forcing them in a socialized agricultural system to pay for slaughterhouses. That to me is immoral. Forcing people to violate their deeply held beliefs is an immoral action every single time, and we should avoid it whenever we possibly can. And socialism can't avoid it because every decision is made collectively by the majority of people in society, in a democratic socialist society. Every decision is made that way. And so everything is collectively owned and managed, or many things are. And as a result of that, everybody has to participate in things that they think is immoral and wrong. And that to me is in itself an evil action. And so I think even if you could make the case that socialism could work economically, and again, I don't think that it could, you still have to deal with this deep moral problem that exists with socialism. And so those are the foundational arguments that I make in socialism is evil.
Thank you so much, Justin, for being on the Be the People show. And you're listening to the Be the People show that's on the America Out Loud Network, as well as my website, bethepeoplenews.com. And so until next time, be the people who will change our nation and also our world. Thank you.